Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. But today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Christine Ashworth. She is the author of a newly published book, Demon Hunt. This is a book that combines demons, fairies, and humans while finding the darkness could become strength. Please join us to find out how we as humans can actually accept ourselves and empower ourselves. But first, a little bit about Christine. Christine Ashworth is a native of South California. The daughter of a writer and a psych major, she fell asleep to the sound of her father's Royal Manual typewriter for years. In a very real way, being a writer is in her blood. Her father sold his first novel before he turned 40, and her brother sold his first book before he turned 25. At a tender age of 17, Christine fell in love with a man she met while dancing in a ballet company. She married the brilliant actor, dancer, painter, music man, and they now have two tall sons who are as dazzling as their parents, keeping the dinner conversation lively. Christine's two dogs rule the outside, defending her vegetable garden from squirrels, while the polydactyl rescue cat holds court inside the house. Isn't that so typical? Everything else in her state of flux. Isn't that interesting? Hi, Christine.
Hello, Irene. How are you?
Good. Well, it's going to be fun talking about you and just getting into a little, into some personal life of yours. But first of all, what we're going to do is talk about your book. And it's titled Demon Soul. Would you just give our listeners a sort of a brief synopsis of what the book is about?
It's about a tribred, Gabriel Kane, who has demon, human, and fairy blood in him. And he's had his soul stolen by a vampire. So he comes back home after being away for 10 years on a self-imposed exile to try to get help from his brothers. And he meets the one person he would never have thought could possibly help him, who's Rose, who's a young, well, she's 24, 25, but she's had a really, really hard life. She's an ex-drug addict, and she's been sent back from the dead and told that she has to save Gabriel Kane. So that's pretty much the book.
All right. Vampire stories are just really popular right now, and I'm curious, why did you decide to write one?
Well, it's kind of an anti-vampire story because my vampires are bad vampires. You know, there was a huge, Twilight had just hit it big when I came up with this idea, and I didn't want to do a vampire story because I didn't know how to do it differently than everybody else. And I didn't want to do a shapeshifter story because, I didn't know how to do it different from everyone else, and I didn't want to do the research that went into, you know, the animals. So I decided on, well, demons are always popular. What about, and I love fairies, how about putting demons, humans, and fairies all in one gorgeous male package and, you know, figuring out how they're going to deal with their bloodlines. So that's really the thrust of the story.
Okay. Demons, fairies, and humans. Well, that is quite a combination. I mean, you know, humans, okay, but then when you're talking about demons, I mean, that's just sort of the total opposite of fairies.
Exactly, which is where the fun comes in, because you've got, there are no rules. Nobody really knows what a demon looks like. Nobody knows what they can do. And the same thing goes true with fairies. So you can really let your imagination play. And I had a blast with that. You know, my demons can change shape to their demon forms. And they can get them into a lot of trouble, too. So, you know, they have to have the control of that. And when they don't have a soul, as in Gabriel's situation, his demon side starts taking over. So he has to get his soul back so he doesn't completely transform into the demon. And then the fairy side is the healer. There is a warrior, say, cast in that land. But for my men, it's really the healer, the nurturer, which is, again, the antithesis of the demon, the destroyer, the bringer of chaos. So it was a lot of fun to write.
I bet it was. But, you know, as I'm listening to you, too, I mean, is it really different than us humans living in this realm with all the demons and the fairies? And, you know, because we ourselves, for growth, have to change shape.
Absolutely.
And, you know, changing shape for us is really important. And I want to just sort of delve into maybe some, you know, of your own, how you were able to change shape and accept yourself for who you are.
Oh, wow. Well, I've reinvented myself several times. I think as we go through life and we come to a certain awareness, the old stuff doesn't work for us anymore, and we have to move on, just like you can't stay in college forever. You know,
no.
You have to move on.
Yeah.
You know, we finally got rid of the last of our, what I'd like to call it, early college chic furniture 5 years ago. And so that's all gone now. So that's, you know, another. But it's really, yeah, it's a reinvention of the person. And I was, oh, gosh, I started out as a ballet dancer, and then I moved to a musical theater actress person, and then I became a receptionist, and then I became a 9-to-5 office worker, and I was the support of my family while my husband was trying to get his acting career going. And then I got laid off from a couple other jobs and ended up being, you know, my husband took the day job for a while, and I decided to reinvent myself as a writer, and that was in 2001. And it's been an interesting journey. I ended up coming back to work full time, which really suits my personality well. And I'm actually getting more written in each day now that I have a day job than I did when I was unemployed. So,
isn't it interesting? You know, I found this too. I retired at some point way back in mid 2000, and I felt that. It was just like I guess trying to reinvent myself in retirement, and that couldn't wear that very well. Mm-hmm. And you know, when I started up my company, and all of a sudden I could do a lot more things.
Yeah, it's amazing how much more time is in the day when you have a lot to do.
Yes, yes, that is for sure. That is so true, and. You know, you say reinventing yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that, I don't know, as humans, especially those with aspirations and commitments and really wanting to better ourselves, we have to reinvent ourselves many times.
I agree. But oftentimes it's not clear to us that we have to do that until it hits us, you know, forcibly, until we get laid off or until we have a bad accident or an illness that forces us to change. Because we're so comfy cozy in the way things have always been that it takes, reinvention takes strong will when it's not forced upon you.
You know, that's so true. I knew that my own personal life was going into a direction that I didn't really like, but I was into such busyness
mm-hmm.
that I it was hard to, you know, take a look at that until I had a huge awakening. And that was the diagnosis of cancer. And when I got that diagnosis, it's like, oh, my goodness, I had an opportunity to reinvent, refocus my life. And I have to say that within 3 months, I have it beaten.
Yeah, I heard, and that's. I'm so proud of you.
Well, thanks.
That's such a wonderful thing. That is just totally awesome.
Well, it is. But, you know, there again, that's exactly what you're talking about is, you know, we have to change shape.
Yeah.
And we have to reinvent ourselves, and I believe that that's really what happened in my case, and you've had a lot of experiences, too. Do you think, Christine, that women reinvent themselves more than men do, or, you know, is there something about the strength of women?
I think, yes, but partially because we have to, and yes, it goes all to the women's cycles and having babies and, you know, you're a girl until you become a wife. And that is true too of men. They're a boy until they become a husband, but it's different, I think, and vastly different from a male perspective. But when you become a mother, it's, again, it's different from fatherhood. It just is.
Uh-huh.
My husband, though, had an interesting take on that. He said, when our kids were really, really, really little and we lived in a two-story house, and, you know, I said, well, gosh, what's going to happen if we ever catch on fire? So this was soon after the Northridge earthquake. And he goes, mm-hmm. Well, honey, if the house catches on fire, I'm grabbing the kids. Good luck getting out on your own. I said, what? And she said, "Well, sweetheart, they're blood. I just married you."
Ouch!
But it told me that, you know, he had reinvented himself as a dad.
As a father.
He had to. Those boys, you know, came first in his life.
Yeah.
So it was real powerful for me to understand the changing dynamic, not only in him and in me, but in our relationship. But, yeah, I do think women have to, because we are only pretty and sexually attractive to people who don't know us for so long.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then that, you know, all of a sudden you can walk down the street and nobody looks at you.
Right.
It's kind of embarrassing.
Like, what happened?
Like, wait a minute.
Yeah, look at me, look at me.
We as we get older, we perfect our sparkling wit and our conversation and we become someone different yet again and attract a different group of people around us, which I think is just fascinating.
I think so, too. And I notice, too, as I'm getting older, and friendships have more meaning, or maybe I shouldn't say more. Maybe it's a different type of a meaning than what they used to have when, let's say, when I was in my 20s and I had all these different friends and just like we did this and that and the next thing. And now as I'm getting older and, you know, I'm 66 now and I have, it seems like fewer really good friends, but they're quality friends and they're like more like sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I find the people that are my closest friends now are the ones that I met in my writer's group 10 years ago. And we were all very new at writing then. None of us had published. And now I think all of us have been published. And it's just a nice, you know, we know that the other gals have your back. You know, if you need a review, they will read that book. They will buy your book. They'll read it, and they'll put that review up on Amazon for you. If you need help on a blog post, they're there for you.
Uh-huh.
You just need to whimper and cry and over stupid stuff, they're there for you. And it's a lot of it is in cyberspace, but, you know, it's kind of comforting to know that you can reach out at 3 in the morning and know someone's going to be there.
Yeah, isn't that true? You know, cyberspace, wow, that just really made this world small, didn't it?
It did. It's kind of scary.
Well, it is on one hand, and yet it's fascinating on the other. You know, to think that there you say, 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, you're needing to speak to someone, and you put it out there, and lo and behold, there's somebody online that can actually respond to you.
Yeah, I have blogger friends that are in Australia.
Uh-huh.
So and New Zealand. So it's kind of neat that if I need to, you know, they're up at my 3 o'clock in the morning. They're in the middle of the day. So, yeah, it's a nice thing. And I don't know all the ramifications of it eventually, but right now it's a really good thing.
Well, I think, I don't know, personally, I think the ramifications are going to be whatever we want them to be. And if we want ramifications, they'll be there. And if not, we will just, you know, coast along and pick and choose what we need to do for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Christine Ashworth. She is the author of Demon's Hunt. I hope you're enjoying our light yet deep conversation. So stay tuned because there's so much more. Empowerment of yourself. Do you have some ideas? I know that women will be listening to this. And, you know, how do you empower yourself?
That changes.
Yes. I'm sure from day to day.
Yes. I just, at my local chapter RWA meeting, an author, DJ Adams, just gave us a pitching workshop and said, one thing I want you all to do, because, you know, national conference is next week, and a lot of us are pitching to agents and editors, and she said, one thing I want you to do is to look at yourself in the mirror every day this week and say, I am worthy.
Wow.
I am worthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that editor and that agent, they put their pants on the same way I do. You know, their digestive tract works the same way mine does. You know, I am worthy of their attention. I am worthy of them buying my book. And if you, it's such a powerful, it's very simple, but so powerful. You know, you find yourself standing a little taller the rest of the day when you do that. And it's somebody that says to themselves they are worthy is not going to be taken advantage of as often as someone who doesn't believe that. So I try really hard not to be taken advantage of.
Well, yeah, and, you know, going back to cyberspace, it's just so much easier to be taken advantage of in that realm. And I like that. I am worthy, but it's not only worthy of the contract, but it's worthy of everything else in life.
Absolutely. All the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
Yep. Yep.
And that is important. I really do like that little tool, you know, going in the mirror and especially first thing in the morning, and it just setting up the day.
Yep. It's you know, it's a mantra you can hum while you're putting on your makeup or, you know, getting your hair done or whatever. But it is powerful. And it's and eventually you say it's something often enough that you, you start to believe it.
Exactly. And because it is the truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, personal empowerment, too, I believe, is setting up the truth for your own self. But there's that other component if you have to believe it, and that's exactly what you just said.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we have to believe that we are powerful, that we are worthy.
Well, it's too easy for other people to take our power away from us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy to let society take it away, easy to give it away. And it's hard, especially for women, to hang on to that power because we don't want to seem bitchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
In men it's assertiveness, in women it's bitchiness, and
I
still don't agree with that, and I don't understand it. And anyway, it's too easy to let people take it away from you. You've got to hang on to it.
I so agree. And so, what do you do when? Or do you have any dark days?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Oh, do you do? Okay, so you're normal.
I'm totally normal. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Every, you know, I'll never write again. And,
right.
my dad's a writer. My dad's a very successful writer, and I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't write until I turned 40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's successful in the fact that he's had over 300 novels published. He managed to raise a family with three kids on his writing. I mean, no, he's not a household name by any means, but he's a very successful writer. He's still writing. He's 83 years old.
Oh, wow.
So that my dark days, you know, I just kind of let them happen because every now and then you need to wallop. And I try not to let it go for more than one day because it's just too, you know. But there's so much goodness. So much, I've got my garden, and it's almost impossible to walk into my garden and feel down, you know. I start yanking weeds or doing something physical, and that helps snap me out of it. I had surgery for an acoustic neuroma in my right ear in December of 2010, and it took me about a year to get my mental faculties back, because anytime somebody goes mucking around in your brain, you know, things, even though they weren't really doing anything in my brain, they were still, you know, things take time to heal.
Yeah.
So that was a real learning curve for me, to be patient, because I still walk at times like a drunken sailor. And it's from the lack it's from having that tumor on my auditory nerve. And it caused an imbalance. And so the dark days are never as dark as they were. Because I've been there, and now watching my husband he's finally able to relax and be emotional about that time because it's, you know, he didn't want to fall apart while I was falling apart. So it's been an interesting Yeah, the dark days are dark, but they're never as dark as they were. So.
You know,
hopefully they will never get dark again.
Isn't it true? And we just have to continue reinventing ourselves.
Yep.
You had mentioned about your husband. You know, I found the same thing with mine, that I think that the day that I got my diagnosis that the cancer was gone was probably, you know, the happiest day of his life. And I think that night was the first night that he slept through the night soundly,
yeah,
for the first time for, you know, the 3 months that I was going through the process. And, you know, they try to be very strong as our husbands in the male species.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that they're also, you know, they do go through pains, and they have their dark days too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because they need to be strong for us. So you had mentioned that your father is a well-known writer and has been for many, many years. And, you know, when you say the Royal Manual typewriter,
mm-hmm,
I have to smile because I remember those.
Yeah.
And, you know, the sound of them and the sound of the keyboard, I guess they weren't called keyboards at that time, I don't know what they were called, but your father has been writing for a long time. And what is his author name?
Well, his name is Chet Cunningham.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, he's not famous.
Uh-huh.
He's written under several house names,
uh-huh,
publishing house names. He wrote for the Penetrator series in the 70s and 80s. He wrote,
uh-huh,
for the Mac Bolan series. He wrote for, trying to think. He wrote Pony Soldier series. He wrote...
quite a few.
Yeah. I mean, you get into a series like that, and, you know, Penetrator, he was, I think he did all the even-numbered ones,
uh-huh,
and another writer did the odd-numbered ones.
So what was it like growing up in a family where the father was a writer, and that's how he made his, you know, the money to sustain the family?
It was really cool.
Yeah?
Yeah, because he was always there.
Uh-huh.
You know, I did not have an absentee father who went away to work every day. He worked in his office,
uh-huh,
at home. And, you know, he wouldn't get up before we left for school, so he'd sleep in. But,
uh-huh,
he would get up and eat breakfast, and he'd start writing at 9 in the morning. He'd stop writing at noon,
uh-huh,
have lunch with my mother,
uh-huh,
start writing again at 1:30.
Wow.
Right until we came home from school. Sometimes would continue to write because he had a deadline or something.
Uh-huh.
And then take a break at 4:30 and be with the family until after dinner. And then he'd go back to his writing, and he'd write until Johnny Carson came on.
Wow.
Yes, that was an intimidating person to grow up with. And my dad is one of the gentlest, sweetest, kindest souls you'd ever meet. And you wouldn't think of him as intimidating, but his willpower and his drive was,
yeah,
just...
And the commitment.
And the commitment.
I mean, obviously, if he, you know, it's easy to work out of your home and just do odd things and, you know, get away from what you're really doing. But it sounds like he was committed to his writing, and that's exactly everything that, you know, he focused his life around that.
Yes, absolutely. He got a journalism degree from Columbia University, his master's.
Uh-huh.
And he said it's because they didn't have anyone else apply to the program from Oregon. And I said, Daddy, come on. and so he and my mom lived in New York for a while while he was doing that. But,
uh-huh,
he sold his first novel in 1968.
Wow.
And it was a hardback called Gold Wagon,
uh-huh,
a Western. He hasn't looked back. He's just amazing.
That's great. And obviously, you're not looking back either.
No, because, you know, that's, if you look back, you stumble on the road that you're on. So, can't do anything to change the past. You can only change the future.
Isn't that the truth? Oh my goodness, that is such the truth. So, Christine, tell our listening audience your website address.
It is christine-ashworth.com. If you Google me, you'll probably find me.
Uh-huh. Listeners, it's Christine-Ashworth, ASHWORTH.com. Check out the Demon Hunt. This is a brand new book that has just come out, and it's published by Crescent Moon Press. I know that you're going to thoroughly enjoy it. It's just, you know, if you enjoy fantasy, demons, fairies, this little human mixture in there, you're going to like this one for sure. Christine, thank you so much. This has been a real pleasure talking to you.
Oh, Irene, thank you. It's been, I've had a great time.
I did too. And listeners, thanks for listening. Bye for now.